Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kerbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Robbie Kelman Baxter. Robbie is a renowned subscription expert, and having her on the podcast was an absolute honor and pleasure. As you'll hear in the episode, Robbie got her start in the subscription business consulting with Netflix. Yes, that Netflix. In addition to the plethora of content on her website, she had one of the earliest podcasts exclusively dedicated to subscriptions. It's still running, and I've listened to every episode. This is a one-times speed or multiple listen kind of episode because Robbie's insight into subscriptions is immensely valuable for us attorneys who want to use the subscription model in our practice. Thank you to 650 and Gavel, links to both in the show notes, more on them later, and remember to use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. It lets them know you found out about them from the podcast, and it really supports this show. If you're listening when this episode airs, final details are going live this weekend for subscriptionseminar.com, and those who signed up on the waitlist will get first access starting next week. I've built this seminar from scratch. It's a nuts and bolts how to start a subscription model for your firm, and I'm very involved in helping each firm or attorney as part of the program. The podcast is finally getting more traction, so please rate and review it if you haven't already to help others discover the show. And as always, please share it with somebody you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Robbie Kelman Baxter, thank you so much for joining me on the Law Subscribed podcast.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm really happy to have you. And for my listeners, if they're listening to this podcast, I think they've done some other subscription research. But just in case they haven't, to give a quick introduction about you, let's go to everyone's favorite and the most popular generative AI, ChatGPT. So if you prompt ChatGPT and you say, provide a list of subscription experts. And for those of you, I haven't explained it in detail on this podcast yet, but ChatGPT is essentially a language prediction algorithm. So it predicts the next most likely word. And it's trained on the whole internet. And so when you prompt it, provide a list of subscription experts, it says, certainly, here's a list of subscription experts who have made significant contributions to the field. Number one, Robbie Kelman Baxter, leading expert on subscription and membership models. So that's maybe all the introduction we need. But I figured, well, and it gives you a list of the top 10, and you're number one. So I did ask it to give a little introduction here, and so we'll see how it does. I'm not going to read the whole thing because, you know, ChatGPT is very wordy sometimes. It's like very verbose. But in short, it said, I said, introduce you to an audience. So here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, please allow me to introduce Robbie Kelman Baxter, a renowned expert in the field of subscription models and the author of the influential book, The Membership Economy. Robbie is a dynamic and insightful speaker who has made significant contributions to the understanding and implementation of subscription-based business models. She has worked with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500 companies, guiding them through the process of creating and optimizing subscription offerings. Her expertise lies in understanding the power of building long-term relationships with customers through subscription models. How to do?
I'd love to hire them, but I'd love to have ChatGPT as my advance man, but also, you know, they used to always say, you know, if it's on the internet, you got to believe it, it must be true. And it's sort of the same with ChatGPT. Take it with a grain of salt, but I have been writing about and studying the subscription world for a very long time and in a pretty focused way.
So then how does one become a subscription expert like yourself, Robbie? Where did the journey begin?
You know, I think that it really started for me when I started consulting for Netflix, and this is more than 20 years ago. So I'd always been interested in a lot of the threads that have come together to be sort of my beat, my area of focus. You know, always interested in people and relationships, always interested in business strategy. But in 2001, I got laid off while I was on maternity leave from my product management job, where I was working on what now would be called a SaaS product, a B2B software product that was subscribed to. And I said, I'm going to be independent. I'm going to figure this out myself. I'm going to just be beholden to my clients, not to a whole political structure. And my fifth client was Netflix. And they really rocked my world. The way that their business model worked, their clear focus on a subscription model, their understanding of the importance of retention as sort of the secret sauce to both revenue growth and profitability really, really wowed me and got me thinking. And I started, you know, writing about it and, you know, focusing on it and trying to prioritize clients that were interested in subscription models. So my next few clients were PayCycle, which is part of Intuit, so subscription payroll services, SurveyMonkey. And then not too long after that, I worked with Electronic Arts and some other companies that were trying to move into subscriptions. So that was kind of where it started. And what I was really impressed by was how well this model worked, how few people understood it, and how applicable it is to almost any business, I would say, where the customer has choice, where you're not the only game in town, you're not last gas for 100 miles or the only one that has the patent. You know, subscription is a really good approach to consider.
Yeah. And still nascent in the legal profession, but I think your story with what happened to you when you were on maternity leave and got laid off is actually very resonant with my audience. And most of the lawyers I've had on this show who are innovating with the model are women attorneys, that the situation billing time at big law firms that are not very flexible is made them say, no way, that's not for me. But you also are not a stranger to the legal profession because your father was a lawyer, right? So maybe tell us a little about your experience with law firms.
Yeah. So my dad's a lawyer. My dad was a lawyer. My grandfather was a lawyer. And when I was five, my dad moved from New York to California. He was a Wall Street lawyer, and he moved to California to start a law firm with some of his, I guess you'd call them his cubicle mates, his bay mates from the law firm. And when I was in high school, I was looking for a job. And so my dad said I could come and work for him. So I was working for his corporation, not for the law firm. He was very clear about that. Money was coming from him. I was reporting to his secretary, and he had me billing by the 10th of the hour, just like the lawyers. So if I had to go from the 8th floor to the 3rd floor to, you know, make the rotation around, you know, the different partners and get signatures, I had to say, you know, one tenth of an hour waiting for elevator, 1/10 of an hour waiting for, you know, Mr. Jones to get off his phone call so that he could look at the documents, 1/10 of an hour, you know, waiting for Mr. Jones to read the document. And, you know, by the end of the first day, I'd been there for like 12 hours and I was billing for 3 hours. And my dad's secretary was like, what the heck? That is not okay. You know, you were in the building and you didn't take a break. You know, we're going to charge your dad for the whole amount. But I did learn a lot that summer about the legal practice. And I actually almost went, I got into law school after college, and I was planning to go, but ultimately ended up, you know, going more in the business direction. So this close to going to becoming a lawyer.
Well, I'm glad you didn't. And frankly, you dodged a bullet. No, I'm trying to make law practice a lot more fun when you're developing long-term relationships with your clients who are not afraid to call you because you're going to be billing those tenths of an hour for them whenever they try to contact you, right? So through line, even the non-lawyers on the podcast have also had to bill their time. And and so that's really something. So, you know, I should also say you have the book, The Forever Transaction. So whenever this is an audio podcast first, but whenever I get around to finally publishing this video, as those of you watching it will see it in the background. So let's talk about the books a little bit and just give a sort of a primer on those. So The Membership Economy, which was mentioned by ChatGPT, what was the inspiration for writing that book? And sort of, you know, at a high level, you know, like what does that book cover?
So I wrote the book in 2014, but it was a long time coming because I was finding that it was really hard for me to explain to people what I was seeing. I was seeing a massive transformation in the world. I was seeing both, you know, consumers and businesses alike looking for approaches that were more aligned with their outcomes, their desired outcomes and goals. Less about fixing things when they were broken, less about ownership, more about making sure that the problems never arose, more about having access. And, you know, I could explain it to somebody in a conversation, but it was tiring. And I also was realizing that there were some people who got it and they would make great consulting clients. And there were other people who just didn't see how powerful the model could be. And so I really wrote the membership economy as a kind of 1-pound business card to say, you know, hey, this is what I see. This is the evidence I have. This is how a membership mindset, which is, you know, what I think is required before you can justify subscription pricing, a mindset that you're going to be working with this customer, this account, this relationship for a long time. Therefore, you need to treat them in a certain way. If this makes sense to you, if this seems like something that can work for you, give me a call. And I fully intended, Matthew, to give away all the books. I did not expect as many people, you know, the book sold, I think, more than 30,000 copies at this point. Like, I didn't expect so many people to actually go and buy the book. But that was okay, because I was a consultant and I was trying to convey my point of view so that potential clients could decide for themselves, is it worth talking to Robbie? And for me, it was a big time saver, because if you looked at the book and said, this makes no sense to me, you were saving your own time. You're also saving my time.
Yeah. And one of the values of a subscription model, as you well know, is the ability to scale. And so you can't scale yourself talking to people. And a book is a really great way to scale, right? And so I think it sounds like you're able to find some scale success with that. So then why the second book? Why the Forever transaction?
So the membership economy really lays out the business case for subscriptions. Here's why you should think about it. Here's what it can do for you. Here's some examples of how it works in different situations. I wrote that book because people didn't get it. They didn't see how it could work. 5 years later, everybody saw how it could work. It, you know, the book did its job. There were a lot of other, you know, a lot of other trends that aligned to make subscription and membership really interesting and meaningful to a lot of different kinds of organizations and a lot of different industries, but people didn't know how to do it. And they were bumping up against problems, the same problems. So if the membership economy is really a business case, the Forever transaction is a go-to-market plan. It's a blueprint, it's tactical. It says, this is what you do. If you're just getting started, first section is, if you're just getting started, here's how to sort of formulate what I call a Forever promise that would justify that Forever transaction. Here's how to think about what your offering should be. Here's how to think of your ideal member. Second part of the book, how to scale it. So there's a lot of people that have little subscription businesses, experimental subscription businesses, off in the corner of their larger practice. If the time comes where you say, no, actually, I'm going to bet the farm on this, that's when you kind of are in that scaling situation. And then the final part of the book is about, what do you do if you've been successfully running a subscription for a while and it's not working as well as it used to? It's growing long in the tooth. So good examples of that, newspapers. A lot of newspapers have been using subscription for a long time, but they really ran into some troubles over the past several years where people were no longer subscribing, and trying to figure out, why aren't people subscribing anymore? And so that was what the third part is what are some of the common mistakes made by organizations that grow up with a subscription model?
Mm-hmm. Not any of those in the legal profession yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, we're all still in those first two stages. And before I left a law firm to start my own practice based entirely on the subscription model, really subscription and flat fee. I have both pure subscription and subscription and flat fee elements to that model. I was at a firm and they had given me the blessing to the pandemic happened and like we were not billing as many hours in court as we used to because we weren't in court. And so they were like, hey, you know, that subscription thing you talked about last year, you know, that sounds like a really good idea now. So how about you do that thing? Oh, and still bill all the time that you can, you know, and that was really hard to do. And so
really
like
hard.
I had to leave and commit to it 100%. Otherwise, I just felt like it was never going to happen. So is that sort of part of what I have to imagine what you sort of talk about in the book? If like it's a little experimental thing over here, like how often does that little experimental thing succeed if you don't go all in?
Right. And it's such an interesting question, Matthew, because when I told you my first real subscription client was Netflix. Mm-hmm. For many years, Netflix had one business model and that was subscription. And they publicly stated, you know, we're never going to have advertising. We're never going to sell game, you know, videos. We're never going to go into the games business. It's just going to be video, you know, professionally created video content delivered through subscription. And so for a long time, I was really biased and I felt like you can't have a second business model at the same time. And I really pushed my early clients to abandon their other pricing structures. So their, whatever it is, their hourly, their billable hours, their buy it and own it, their pay as you go, whatever, all the different models. I've softened. I think it's possible to have both, but it's very distracting because you're truly running two different companies, two different businesses. And I think people underestimate how different they are, not just the pricing, but you know, in the case of your work, I would imagine this is the case in the actual delivery of the product itself. What are the services that you provide? What motivates you? What are the indicators that things are going well? That's very different. And the culture, the mindset of people, if you're going to have a subscription offering, has to change. Having both in the same place, you know, it's a little bit hard for a culture to coalesce that supports both.
Yeah, I think that's a really important lesson still. And I do some like continuing legal education presentations on the subscription model for legal services. And one of the recommendations I make for those attorneys who are subscription curious, but they're not really sure, but especially if they already have a flat fee-based practice. So if they've already started to or have completely moved away from the billable hour, but they have flat fees, my recommendation has been in the past, well, what you can do is you can design a subscription model where subscribers get a discount on all those flat fees. So at least it creates a little bit of a, you know, you have some monthly recurring revenue. You're, you know, it takes care of those calling situations where maybe they're not capturing any revenue from talking to their clients, depending on how they structure their flat fees at that point. But then they do still have like their non-subscriber flat fees, their subscriber lower, you know, discounted flat fees. And now you've got me questioning whether or not that's even a wise recommendation, because I make all my clients subscribe, even starting at $20 a month. They are all subscribers. And so that relationship I have with them and the way I think about them as clients is totally different, like you're saying, because they're all subscribers to get access to any of my flat fee services. So what do you think? Should I start just recommending that they go all in on it, or can it work as like a, you know, get their foot in the door to like start with a subscription and maybe eventually pivot away from it?
So anytime you have multiple businesses happening at once under the same roof, it requires, you know, a lot of resources, right? Mind share, attention, right? You're targeting different customers, different situations, different problems. I would imagine that your clients that are on a subscription have a different expectation of the kind of relationship they're going to have with you over time. And they might look different than your flat fee clients, your pure flat fee clients. So you're taking care of different people. You're trying to attract two different groups of people. You're trying to determine, you know, how do you allocate resources between these two businesses if you have staff? How do you compensate people and reward them for bringing in different kinds of clients? All of that becomes complicated. On the other hand, if you want to experiment, as we all do, you know, you don't want to make a big bet without having some confidence that it's going to work, then I think doing what you're describing can work really well. But you need to be really clear about what the hypotheses are. And a hypothesis can be as simple as, what are your worries? What could go wrong? And then you make a list and then you say, what is the best way to test whether this is likely to go wrong? Mm-hmm. And you can kind of, you know, that's often a time when you're working on those small experiments. And then over time, you can expand. The other thing that I would say is that sort of when you think about frameworks for the membership economy, different pricing options, different ways of thinking about it, there are subscriptions which are kind of all in. Like, in other words, the product is the subscription, like what you describe, right? Mm-hmm. $20 a month. That's what I offer. I offer subscription. There is nothing else. You can also use subscription to complement your big flat fee project. So Bain & Company, big consulting firm, they generally make their money by having seven-figure consulting engagements that are one-time, right? They're episodic. You know, you get a call from the customer, and they say, hey, we're thinking of making this acquisition, or hey, we're trying to do our five-year plan, or hey, we need to downsize. Bain, can you help us? Sure, that'll be $3 million. That's a project, right? They also have the Net Promoter Loyalty Forum, which is a membership group you pay annually to have access to a group of senior leaders, in this case, that are responsible for loyalty in large companies. Mm-hmm. They meet, they have speakers, and Bain uses that group as a way of sharing their thought leadership, building ongoing stable relationships, bringing lighter, you know, bringing people in who aren't ready to commit to a big project yet, and keeping people engaged who've had a big project, but the big project is over, keeping them engaged. So the next time there's a big project, they feel greater trust for Bain. They know more of the partners and so on. So that's another way of doing it. That's another kind of subscription you could offer as a way of building relationships between those big engagements. And then a third way, which you described, which I sometimes think of as the Costco model or the Amazon Prime model, which is, you know, you don't, let's call it the Amazon Prime model. You don't have to use Amazon Prime to shop on Amazon, but most people do. You get a lot of discounts by going through Amazon Prime. You also get a lot of benefits by going through Amazon Prime. So if you're serious about shopping with Amazon, you'd be foolish not to have Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. If you only shop with Amazon once a year, fine. But if it's a priority, you know, if it's a place where you're going to go, and that's a premium loyalty program, and they're increasingly popular, and it almost sounds like that's what you're offering. Like, if you are really serious, if we're the law firm of choice for you, pay this fee. You get discounts on everything. You pay up front, but you get discounts on everything. The more you spend, the more you save. And we reserve some of our best benefits for people like you. So that might be, you know, you get access outside of business hours. It might mean you get things first. It might mean you get cut to the front of the line. It might mean, you know, I don't know what the other things might be, but there are lots of ways to build a really beautiful membership model without putting all the benefits inside the subscription.
Yeah. When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney, or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form at scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show. Kudos to you, because yes, Amazon, the Prime subscription, largely influenced a lot of my design for my own subscription, including their subscription add-ons, right? Do you want Music Unlimited? You could get it separate, or you could get it at a discount if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, right? Kids Plus, you know, all these additional subscription add-ons. So I have unbundled my legal services, and then when you subscribe at $20 a month, you could bundle them back in with subscription add-ons, or just pay me a much higher subscription, you know, per month, and then you'll get it all bundled in at a discount. Even so, like,
so, okay.
Yeah.
So here's some things that I'd be thinking about with your model, which is really interesting. And I think it's very creative. The questions I'd be asking if you're a client of mine are, which is better for you? Do you want people to subscribe for all in the bundle, the biggest bundle? Is that the best way to work with you? I went out to dinner with my dad last night and we were talking about his work, and he was telling me about, I was saying how, you know, I design my work so that the people that I can do the best work for get the best deal, and it's obvious to them whether they should work with me or not. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that shouldn't work with me for all kinds of reasons. And my dad said, you know, I had one client in my career who asked me this question: what am I supposed to do to get the most value from you? What should I be doing to get the most value? And my dad said, you know, I was so touched by the level of trust, and I really wanted to take care of him. He was not being cheap but I did not take advantage. You know, I really tried to give him the best I had to offer because that's what he wanted. And so when you're thinking about your pricing model and where subscription goes, is it for your best customers? Is it for your lightest customers? What is the role it plays? And also, when they come to your website or when they talk to you about what they should be doing, is it easy and obvious, or did they feel like they need to become an expert on your pricing model in order to get a fair deal? Because one of the most important things that a subscription can do is drive trust between you and your client, where the client can relax and say, you know, the meter's not ticking, we're not doing that six, you know, tenth of an hour kind of relationship. I can relax. I can take off my consumer hat. I can put on a member hat, and we can just have a trusted conversation. If you have 25 different bundles and options and add this, or you can get this on the side, then the customer, the client has to keep their wits about them. They have to be aware. They have to think, am I getting the best price, or should I be changing what I'm doing? And what you want them to do is say, Matthew, I trust you. Charge me what you need to charge me. Put me in the program that's the best for a person like me. And then, this is also important, make sure I'm getting the value I'm entitled to. Remind me, if I'm entitled to something that I'm not using, remind me. It's not about upselling. It's like you already paid for it. And that's customer success, which is very popular in the world of software as a service, but I think is a good concept for any subscription business to think to yourself, not just how do I get someone to sign up for my subscription, but how do I ensure that they're getting the value they're entitled to? How do I ensure that they stay engaged so that they don't cancel?
I mean, it's incredible insight. And I do have on a very separate web page that I don't specifically link to right away. You can find it on my website of all my flat fee services unbundled, right? But I do try to have three buckets, you know, that I try to funnel people into. Are you just an everyday person and an individual, a freelancer, solopreneur, or are you like a business owner? And if I try to funnel you into those buckets first. It's hard. It's a hard problem to solve. And I think my forever promise, which goes back to the like what even what your dad was saying, which was, you know, like what's the greatest value? And like that's I feel like that's really tied up with a forever promise is like I like offload your legal to me. Like I'm your general counsel, your fractional in-house counsel, your general counsel as a service. Are you just an everyday person? Then maybe $100 a month is really all you need to get access to me. So whenever a legal thing comes up, you could ask me about it. Right. And then you're entitled to all this other flat fee services, but you don't really need bundled stuff because you're an everyday person. You have an occasional employment issue. You have an occasional, a contractor wants you to sign a contract kind of a thing. So you don't need it all the time, but you know, the law is the operating system of society, Robbie. So we can't live in society without operating in the law. Law touches everything. Just people don't know when something is legal or not. And they don't want to pay $300 an hour to figure out if it is.
Right. And I think what's beautiful about what you're saying is, there's lots of times when you might need this, and the question is, you know, once they sign up, I'm assuming that you do kind of prompt them to say, you know, these are some of the things that you might use. You know, whenever you sign a contract, send it to me first. Whenever, you know, you're about to, you know, make a deal with somebody and you have a bad feeling, call me. You know, to tell people. The other thing that I wonder about, and I know you're thinking about, is it's not for every person in America or in your state. It's
Illinois, yeah.
for in Illinois. It's for certain people. What kind of people get the value, right? Would, you know, your cousin, is it for me? Is it for somebody that runs a small business? Is it for somebody who is just about to get married, buy a house, have a kid, which I think are sort of, you know, maybe the
That's a
big
great
three?
client. That's a great client. Yeah, I'll have that. I have those clients, and yeah, they and because that's the, that is the like those are the questions, right, Robbie? And the problem is it's selling problem avoidance because most people think of hiring a lawyer when they've had a really bad problem and they can no longer solve it themselves. And so they're like, shoot, I need to hire a lawyer. And lawyers, that's the market they're serving. We're there, we're ready, and we're going to
Right, you
charge you a
fix
pre
what's broken.
we're going to charge you a premium to fix what's broken. So the subscription model tries to change that paradigm, right? And there's also a huge access to justice problem. So I am both trying to make money using the subscription model, but also trying to solve my little sliver of the access to justice problem at the same time. And I still think you can make a really good living doing that. Now, it's not going to be the kind of living that you're going to make at a big giant law firm, but I still think you can live, have a sustainable lifestyle as a practicing attorney with the model and serve those unmet legal needs. I do think, everyone can use an attorney that they could call on, just like everyone could use a doctor. Would you say that there's a single person out there in the world that doesn't need a doctor ever? I think everyone needs a lawyer at some point. And so the promise, I actually just bought the domain to offloadlegal.com. If you can focus on what makes you money in your business or what makes you happy, if you one of those two things or both of those things, and you never have to worry about a legal problem again because you've got a lawyer on subscription, I think everyone could use a lawyer. Now, not necessarily me as their lawyer, right? And the model that I've developed and will continue to change over the years. But I still feel like a lot of people can be served by having a lawyer they could contact. And I'm working with a generative AI startup to have a, for subscriber only in my client portal, a generative AI bot that they could actually ask some like contract analysis questions to and then follow up with me on it as like an added benefit. And so like even just having access to something like that where they could actually then talk to a lawyer, it's like next level LegalZoom, and that's like very early stages. So I mean, so what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think, you know, when I work with a lot of company, you know, organizations, you know, you talk about the ideal member, right? And a lot of times there's like the vision and then there's the where do you start, right? So Amazon, their vision was all people, everywhere, all products, you know, that basically if you removing all friction from all buying for all people,
right?
Which is lofty. And they're frankly getting very close to being able to do that. They're global in most markets. They sell almost anything that you can imagine, right? And, you know, they deliver it, you know, in many cases, same day. And in some markets, they ask you for your key and they bring it into the house, right? Which is kind of crazy. But again, part of the friction, you know, I have a daughter, you know, living in her, for, you know, in an apartment in the city. And, you know, that's the biggest issue is that she's at work and, you know, dropping it off would be a lot better if they put it inside, you know, her apartment, you know, but they started with books and they started in the US,
right?
Because you can't do everything for all people. So I think what's important is holding those two things. So you're seeing this opportunity for justice for all people in Illinois, right? Access to justice for every person, right? Every person could ultimately one day become a client. But today, you're going to start with a group with a particular profile who it's easy to explain to them and to demonstrate value for them that you can serve today. But you already are coming up with ways to scale yourself, to leverage yourself, to serve more, you know, more people in more ways. And at that point, each time you'll broaden who your ideal member is because you can do it for more people, maybe because you're able to lower your price point, maybe because you're able to provide more services. But I think that's a really good way of thinking about any subscription. Start really narrow and focused, but also have your eye on that big lofty vision of what does this look like if I'm really able to fulfill the full forever promise.
Yeah, yeah. I do wish I would have talked to you like 2 years ago because I'm doing the opposite, which I still think in certain circumstances works. Like I'm starting as broad as possible, trying to find where the most need is. And then I was actually planning to like niche down into that. And the podcast is there to inspire other lawyers to then fill those other needs that like I can't fulfill, right? So like I do make a little money from the podcast that's sponsored, but like the podcast is mostly just to be inspirational, right?
Yeah.
And so that's how I'm trying to solve the problem as a solopreneur. Maybe Robbie, if I change my mind and I want to start a big giant law firm, maybe I'll start broad, narrow down, and then re-expand back out into a big law firm serving access to justice. But I have a question for you about the model specifically, and that is the ease with which, and this is very relevant with the recent FTC ruling with click to subscribe, click to unsubscribe, or not the ruling, but the opinion that they released, how easy one should make it to resubscribe and unsubscribe. So maybe a little bit before the FTC had its, you know, opinion out there, but also in light of that opinion, you know, how do you handle that offboarding, onboarding process to make it so they want to come back? And just a quick anecdote is I found that if I always made it really easy to unsubscribe. And even when they're not subscribed, they still kind of think of me as their lawyer. And then when another thing happens, they resubscribe because I've made it really easy, same account info. And then boom, they're back on and they've hired me to do another thing. So like how... I know law is a little different than maybe some other industries, but Netflix, like when I was a Disney Plus subscriber, first I subscribed, I binged The Mandalorian, and then I unsubscribed. And now then I had a kid and same account. I'm now a subscriber, right? So like talk about the importance of that.
Yeah. So there's sort of the legal side and there's the ethical side and there's the business side, I guess. Three different ways of looking at that. So So start with the ethical side, right? Because, we actually have to look at ourselves in the mirror at the end of each day and at the beginning of each day and say, do I feel proud of what I did today? And I think hiding the cancel button is yucky. That's a technical term. I mean, I think it's unethical. What you're trying to do is force people to continue paying for something that they've indicated they don't want by making it hard for them to get out of the deal. And I feel like that is wrong. And what kind of person wants to make a living where they say most people don't really want to have our product, but it's very hard for them to get out because we've made it a, five screen flow, exit flow, and we require at the very end that you call us and we're only open on Tuesdays or what have you, right? Which companies do. And I've been at these meetings, where there's a group of CEOs at, some kind of, venture LP meeting, and I'm working with the portfolio execs, and they're bragging to each other about how they're extending their subscriptions by a month or two by effectively hiding the cancel button. So first thing is, I feel like it's unethical. Second thing, from a financial perspective, the answer is it depends. So some organizations are finding that short term, you do make more money, right? If you are part of quarterly capitalism, if you are paid by hitting a certain number this quarter and you're planning to be out the door next year and you're not building for the long term and you don't own the business, maybe hiding the cancel button can help you achieve your short term goals. If you are in the long game, that is, you want to have a business that continues to grow and be profitable for years to come, you want your subscribers, whether they stay or leave, to think well of you, right? Partially because they come back, partially because they make referrals. And when they leave, that's a very good signal to you of, I am no longer, why are they leaving? It's super important to understand that. Sometimes they leave, like your example with The Mandalorian, right? I binged it, I don't need it anymore. So Disney Plus should think about what can we do to keep him from going back to Netflix? What else can we offer? Why did he only like Mandalorian? Did we not surface? We either they don't have any other content that you like, or they did a bad job of surfacing that content to you. Those are sort of the two things. There's a reason that's justifiable, which is I just had a baby and now I have no time to watch TV, which is maybe a good reason. But understanding that also allows them to fix their product and also to recognize who's okay to let go. And so I think all of that is important. So, and then the last thing, legal, consumers are fed up. Consumers are fed up with bad actors, and the FTC is going after them, starting with, as you know, Amazon for what they're calling dark patterns, which is a more technical way of talking about hiding the cancel button, right? Knowing, they have a project, I think they call it Project Iliad, like because it's so long and convoluted a journey to get out of Amazon Prime. I mean, whoever named it probably thought they were super clever in the moment, but it is really coming back to haunt them.
And I would hope with lawyers, although you never know, we do have legal ethics to comply with. And like a lot of my design around my model is, unfortunately, because I have to do it within the constraints of like professional codes of conduct, right? But, lawyers aren't always the first people to follow good legal advice, even though you'd think that they would be. So it's still an important point to make for my listeners. Another problem I've heard from other lawyers about why they don't want to use the subscription model is because of subscription overload or subscription burnout. And I think of that as a little bit more of a myth because I still see it as like the most useful transaction. If like it's a good transaction, like I'm thinking about my tools like Calendly and Zoom and Descript. Like I'm getting so much value for my annual subscription to these products. I mean, I'm going to be a subscriber forever, right? So if there's great value, I think, and the forever promise is a good one for me, the consumer, then I don't think subscription overload applies. That's just my opinion. I'm curious to know what you think of about that.
Yeah, I think you're right. So, I think there's this malaise, this subscription fatigue that a lot of people are feeling, and I think it comes from a couple of things. One of them is the rise of subscriptions where there's no product market fit. So in other words, if I have to subscribe, but all I have is one question, but you force me to subscribe, let's say for 5 years, there's a product market fit question because I know I just have one question. It's going to take an hour tops. And you're forcing me to commit to unlimited access for 5 years, which you're not, but that happens, right? Where, or, you are forced to subscribe to something that you would rather own. You're not valuing the benefits you're paying for. I think that's one thing that drives subscription fatigue. A second thing that drives it is what I think of as subscription guilt, which is what happens when you join a gym, right? I know I should go. I know it provides great value. It's not their fault. It's my fault. But I'm not using it and I feel bad about myself, so I'm going to cancel. So that happens. That's when you have a good product and you don't use it. Might have been your problem at Disney Plus. That I think the issue usually is that the organization is not doing a good enough job of making sure that you're getting the value that you're entitled to. And I think that the last one, which is hiding the cancel button, which drives a lot of fatigue and a lot of anger and a lot of frustration, is if I sign up for this, they're counting on me to forget that I have it and then to keep paying. And a lot of people do forget that they have things and keep paying. And that's a horrible feeling. So I think that there is a real subscription fatigue, but I don't think that it's like don't have a subscription because there's subscription fatigue. It's build a model that makes sense for the people you're trying to reach and make sure they get value out of it.
Yeah, I think that's a really important takeaway. And sort of starting as we like begin to round out this interview here, you have a subscription, a 6-month subscription to your mentoring professionals program. So tell my listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it starts at 6 months. Some people have it for years. Some people, kind of time out after that period. But the idea is it's for solopreneurs, solo practitioners who are selling services. So lawyers count. I have several loyal lawyer clients, loyal subscribers. And it provides, there's a few different models, but it's basically unlimited access for questions relating to business model and subscription. So for me, honestly, I mostly make a living with much bigger projects with corporate accounts and corporate relationships. But I've done this now for, I don't know, 10, 15 years as more as a giving back, as a way of making it easier for people who come behind me to not hit the bumps in the road that I hit.
Well, I think it's great. And you also have a lot of other great resources, right? And right before we sat down for this interview, I saw the LinkedIn post go live. So I'll have all those links in the show notes, right? You've got the newsletter, you've got the Subscription Stories podcast, which I was an early listener to. So the way I discovered Robbie for everyone is that I was doing research on the subscription model in like late 2018. I got into it in 2019. And then when I thought about launching the podcast, I just started to search in podcast apps for like subscription podcast. And there are, at least at the time, I haven't done that in a couple of years, there were not a lot.
No.
And so your podcast, which of course linked to that in the show notes, was one of the first ones, and that's where I first discovered your work. But then you also have a YouTube channel, and so we'll post to that too, and the link to the mentoring subscription that you offer for solopreneurs, we'll link to that too. Why put out all this great content for free?
A lot like you, I think, number one, it's a way for people to find me. Right. And to understand what my point of view is. And if it resonates, we can work together. I think, second, it helps me think better. So I'm learning as I create the content. Honestly, I love to learn. And, I don't know if you find this too, but, having the podcast or I'm just starting work on my next book, having a project like that is a great excuse to call people that are interesting to you, that you want to learn from and talk to them. And then the other thing that I found is that pretty early in my consulting career, I got into the habit of writing an article, trying to write an article after every major client meeting. So I'd walk out of a client meeting and I'd say, that went great because that client understands XYZ. I'd write an article, why the best clients understand XYZ, and then I'd write something. Or that was a terrible meeting. So that team, only half of them really understand the underlying principles and they're so focused on the dollars and, why focusing on the dollars won't get you where you need to go, right? And it forces me to codify or to synthesize what I learned that day. And then I put it out there so, other people can benefit from it and also so that, maybe they can give me some feedback and make it better.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great. And personal thank you for putting it out there because I've read a lot of it. And so if everyone, also another thing is follow Robbie on LinkedIn, click that bell so you see all her posts. She doesn't overwhelm you with
No.
posting and all of it's very useful stuff, especially some of like the charts and the graphs and the breaking things down. Those are fantastic. And I'm going to borrow something from your podcast, Robbie. So do you have time for a speed round?
Oh boy. Yes.
First subscription you ever had.
Cricket magazine or Dynamite magazine when I was about six.
All right. Favorite subscription right now?
Oh gosh, I love Matilda's flower. It's called Matilda's Flowers, and they're here in California, and I think they're also in Texas, and they go find flower growers, American flower growers, and basically buy what the flower grower needs them to buy. So, we have too many of XYZ flowers this month because it rained or it didn't rain or it was very sunny. And then they send you the flowers that make a particular bouquet. So they design a bouquet based on what's
Cool.
available that week. Then they write these beautiful instructions for how to make the bouquet, and then they deliver the flowers to your house.
And
I love
it's
it.
sustainable, because they weren't, these other places weren't selling those flowers anyway or whatever, right? So that's, I love that. That's great. What company is using subscriptions better than any other company?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of them. I mean, I think Amazon is just, I think they're doing, they're pushing a little hard in some areas, but I do think they do a really nice job. LinkedIn is my other favorite because they use almost every single feature that I think is relevant or important in the world of subscriptions. They have a freemium model. They use free trial. They have different subscriptions that are focused on different kinds of people, and they provide value for everyone, and they're constantly adding more. They're constantly helping you. And their journey, a fun fact about LinkedIn, they started, the founders of LinkedIn, before they founded LinkedIn, they had a dating site called SocialNet. And what they realized was that the Forever Promise was very, very short in the world of dating.
Yeah.
And so the next business, they were like, let's have a longer runway. How about people's careers? If we're going to build a trusted relationship, why not build it with people who are then going to be able to benefit from us, not for 6 months, but for, let's say, 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah, and I think that's why we're seeing Bumble move into friendship app dating
Yes,
now, right?
exactly. So
Because
interesting.
yeah, and with a loneliness epidemic, like I think there's probably product market fit there. I guess we'll see. I'm watching that. Two more speed round questions here. What companies using subscriptions should lawyers look to for inspiration?
I think so. There's two answers. One of them is the other professional services firms that are experimenting with subscriptions. So one example that we talked about, Bain and Company and their Net Promoter Loyalty Forum. And I think a lot of like design firms and like what I'm doing, consulting firms, providing access for problems. Oh, the other one, concierge medicine. I had that in my head before we started talking. But same idea, if you actually need surgery, concierge medicine does not cover it. But if you have something funny growing on your hand and you want someone to look at it today, that's what you're paying for, is that responsiveness, that doctor's home phone number. And then the other way to look at it is, as you said, you can learn something from Amazon, you can learn something from Netflix, you can learn something from Peloton. Each subscription is really optimized for not just their industry, but also for their company, right? What are their corporate goals? Are they public or private? Are they a closely held family business? Are they trying to grow? Or are they trying to sustain themselves for the next generation? So there's always something to learn. There's always, a new wrinkle in best practices.
Yeah, and I think Amazon's acquisition of One Medical shows you that concierge medicine is a good one to
Oh,
look at,
yeah.
right?
Oh,
We have
yeah.
one in our town, which is really cool. I'm going to be a subscriber soon, I think. So
Yeah.
I'm already a Prime member, so why
Yeah.
not?
They also have medicine. I don't know if you've seen that, but the $5 subscription to prescription drugs, they have 50 generic, top most popular prescription drugs, and you get them all for $5. I mean, all the ones that you have a
Right,
prescription for,
right, right.
for $5, and then everything else is severely discounted. So that's also really interesting.
It goes back to why it's one of the best ones to, out there.
Yeah.
And then last question, last speed round question for you is, what is the best piece of advice for lawyers who want to build a subscription business?
Figure out who you can best serve, your ideal member, and start by optimizing for them.
Yeah. My last actual question that I ask all my guests, Robbie, is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
I think it is. It's meat between two pieces of bread, sometimes with condiments and sometimes with extra toppings. And yeah, so timely given that, we spent our holiday watching Joey Chestnut down whatever it was, 68 of them, 67.
Right. Okay. All right. So he's the sandwich eating champion then.
The sandwich eating champion.
Well, Robbie, we kind of already mentioned where everybody can find you. So thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Matthew. It was thought-provoking and a lot of fun.
Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for sponsoring this show. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with someone you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.